This is KRFC in Fort Collins. This evening we have two guests, and we're going to discuss what MRSA is and what options are for people that have this. Just a lot of details, but let's move into introducing our guests, Michelle and Les Moore from Fort Collins, Colorado. First of all, Michelle, could you give some of your background and, you know, how you got interested in all of this? I can't wait to get into this subject because it is huge. In fact, one of the people in the KRFC staff, when they heard this is what we were talking about on our way in, informed all of us that I think it's his grandchildren, age 2 and 4, have MRSA already from uncontrollable skin infections that they've used antibiotics over and over again on, and now it's out of control. Mm-hmm. So this is so relevant.
You're very right. This is very pertinent information, and we're glad to be on tonight to share this with you all. Well, as Dr. Judy said, my name is Michelle Moore, and I guess I got interested in this for a variety of reasons. My background is microbiology, so I used to work in the pharmaceutical industry. I actually spent a lot of time studying staph bacteria and many other kinds of bacteria, so I have many years of experience just with working with bacteria and staph specifically. I really was being plagued with my own infections that I couldn't get rid of, and I was in the cycle of antibiotics and reinfection and antibiotics again, and I figured there must be some way to get through this, and I discovered how to do that.
And that's exactly what we want to explore this evening. Les, what's your background?
Thanks, Dr. Judy. Michelle has a background in the pharmaceutical industry, specifically with microbiology, and my background is also from the pharmaceutical industry, but as a chemist.
Okay.
So we both kind of bring a different way of looking at this, and we both bring a lot of scientific background, which is helpful. And there are a lot of approaches that are being used, antibiotics, most of the approaches that are used in Western medicine that we're very familiar with because we've been in that industry, we've worked in pharmaceutical companies, and we've seen that. And on the other hand, we've also seen a lot of other approaches that aren't quite as well known that are effective with MRSA. So we do have a variety of backgrounds that really helps with that.
Let's get our listeners up to date on more about your definition of MRSA, anything that you can bring to the kind of setting an overall big picture for what's going on here.
Definitely, as you mentioned before, MRSA is a bacteria, and it is a type of staph, which is also short for staphylococcus. There's actually about 30 different types of staph bacteria, staph aureus being one of them. And MRSA is a type of Staph aureus that has become resistant to methicillin, which is a type of antibiotics, and actually a lot of other antibiotics as well. This is all about one particular bacteria that's become very resistant to traditional antibiotics, and therefore it's become difficult to treat following traditional antibiotic use.
So if anybody's rushing to their cabinet or their kitchen cupboard or wherever they keep all the high-powered medicines that are prescribed for it, all of us and our children, if they have anything with psyllium at the end of it. I mean, it's really more a resistance to the psyllium drug class or the family. Could you explain some of that?
Well, Les? It's actually a really important point with these infections. Most microbes in general and bacteria, they're really quite smart when you look at how they can adapt to their environment, and they do it really, really quickly. And these MRSA or MRSA bacteria, they have learned to resist all of the commonly available antibiotics that have been used for decades to treat these infections. And year after year, they become resistant to more and more antibiotics. The methicillin antibiotics are based on penicillin. There are other types of antibiotics that are newer, and MRSA is learning to resist even these newer types of drugs. There are different classes of antibiotics, and eventually these bacteria are going to learn how to resist them.
They're pretty intelligent creatures, and they can maybe morph, you know, hide, change shape.
Yeah, it's true. The bacteria in general, as you're saying, they are resistant to penicillin, methicillin, so the psyllins type antibiotics, but also, as Les was saying, many other kinds of antibiotics. Many bacteria reproduce very quickly, and sometimes it's just a few minutes. And if one of them has learned how to become resistant to penicillin or methicillin or another antibiotic, they can easily share that with other bacteria, and there's a lot of different ways they can do that. you know, they've been around for a very, very long time. They have to learn how to grow and in their environment, whatever they're exposed to.
Why do we have an antibiotic? What is that referring to?
Well, biotic is basically life, and anti means against.
Right, so
antibiotic means against life.
So we then be able to define these as life forms.
Oh, definitely.
What happens in our body then when we have a disease, we treat it with antibiotics, and we think we've taken care of it because we start feeling better? What's that progress in people that tells a doctor that the person has MRSA rather than just a, your pneumonia's back?
As far as if you think you have MRSA and what's happening, you know, normally you would go to your doctor and have them look at what's going on. It often manifests, there's different kinds of MRSAs, but the community one often manifests as boils or abscesses on your skin. You could have hot, painful areas on your skin. And a lot of times it actually looks like a spider bite that's misdiagnosed.
Okay, that's what these two little grandchildren.
Oh, okay.
You know, that would be kind of, they have the skin,
yes.
MRSA.
Yes.
So that is called community
acquired.
MRSA. Community acquired CA MRSA.
Yes.
Okay.
And that stands as CAMRSA is
because that's in your book. You have details,
yes,
on this.
Yes.
Okay.
And then there's also HAMRSA, which is healthcare acquired MRSA, which is normally picked up in hospitals or healthcare units, dialysis units, places like that, where there's a lot of people being treated for different, you know, problems, right, when one would go to the hospital. And that can come in through incision sites, if you go in for surgery or some procedure, or even we've had our sister-in-law visited her husband in the hospital and actually got MRSA, and she was not even a patient.
She wasn't the patient. He didn't have it?
She was simply visiting him.
She was visiting
my brother.
And what did he have?
He was having some work done on his arteries.
And he never got MRSA at all?
No.
No, fortunately.
So she got it airborne? In
it's hard to say. You can get it. There are a lot of different ways to get it.
Yeah, hospitals are a different subject. It's on 75% of the surfaces in all hospitals. It's also in the air in hospitals. So it's really easy to pick it up in different ways.
So, you know, I've heard it said before that, well, you know, you don't want to take your children to the, or you don't want to go to the doctor's office.
No.
Because all those sick people there are spreading their, potentially spreading that. I mean, that in the doctor's office, waiting room, that would be kind of a MRSA, an airborne source maybe, or they're leaving things. Tell us more about that.
It could be. MRSA, the community MRSA, CAMRSA is definitely, since it's in the community, it's in places where there's a lot of people. It's at the gym. It could be in daycares, the grocery store. You can pick it up touching the shopping cart handle, working out on a treadmill, touching the side of it. You know, so you can pick it up pretty easily.
And that brings up a good point. A lot of professional sports organizations are having trouble with MRSA infections. Mm-hmm. And if you've been following the news.
Yes, I've been. Yeah, go tell
there's
us.
There's quite
this.
A bit of that happening because, you know, people are in close physical contact, locker rooms, sweating, their pores are open, and it's a real easy way to get MRSA.
Wow. I think there was some, especially wrestling, high school wrestling teams.
Yes.
Weren't there a couple in Colorado that had to discontinue?
Yeah, it's a growing problem, and it's becoming more and more prevalent in the community. This isn't something that just happens in hospitals anymore. And that used to be the case. I mean, this started off not too long after antibiotics were discovered, but it was only in the hospitals.
Very rare.
Now it's being found in the communities all over the world, really.
And, you know, when you talk about high school wrestlers or, you know, people that are involved in sports, we think of these people, our athletes, as our healthiest. We don't think of them, for instance, I'll give an example of where I kind of first heard about the effects of this was with the women that I work with that have osteoporosis and then they have a hip fracture. And what's always said is that they don't die of the osteoporosis or the hip fracture. They die of the infection that they get when they go into the hospital. And 10 years ago when I was first, you know, writing my book and talking about that, it wasn't called MRSA at all. They just said, oh, they die of the infection in the hospital. You know, it was something like, yeah, it's there, and it's rare, and you don't have to worry about it. But as you're saying, if it's affecting young children wherever they go now, and we're hearing more and more of this, this is something we really need to take a second look at. Well, in the meantime, I just wanted to say, for those of you who have just joined us, this is KRFC 88.9 FM. human resistance to antibiotics. What's that all about? I mean, what's causing that, where 10 years ago this was very rare, but now it's becoming more of a health epidemic, or it's, you know, it's really something we need to be concerned about in a general way?
There's a lot of factors that go, into antibiotic resistance. One of them is the overuse and abuse of antibiotics. Doctors, they're busy. The patient comes in. They might have a cold or an upper respiratory infection, and which is usually viral, and they want to go out with a bottle of pills, so they're going to feel better. And the doctors have felt like they needed to provide that to their patients so they would feel better. And so antibiotics do not work against viruses. It's only bacteria that they're effective against. So all these prescriptions going out when bacteria weren't even present is just putting a lot of these antibiotics out there, and bacteria do get exposed to them.
Now, is there a specific test, you know, someone can request that will let them know? Because a lot of times doctors just don't even go there. What can people do to protect themselves from this kind of misdirection here?
That's a really important point. And because MRSA is potentially so dangerous, it's really important to make sure that you know what you have. And if you think you have MRSA, it's really important that you be proactive and get tested and really confirm that, because there aren't that many antibiotics that are going to work against MRSA. And if you don't get tested, it's real easy to misdiagnose these infections as a spider bite and just receive a broad spectrum, just a generic antibiotic from your doctor. And this is very, very common. We hear this every day. And what happens is, when you take these general antibiotics, they're not effective, and they actually weaken the immune system, and it delays you from getting the proper treatment, and it actually can make things a lot worse. So by getting it tested, you'll know if it's a regular staph infection or a MRSA infection, which is just a more virulent type of staph that has learned to resist all of these drugs.
So this is much more, we're talking more external skin type of infections rather than internal. Or can they move inside the body?
They can.
Can you tell us about that?
They can. CAMRSA is usually skin-associated, but it can also be internal, and hospital-type infections can be either or. It depends if you got an implant put in, and you might get an internal infection put out of that. But a lot of times the skin infections can go internally, especially they'll manifest as a boil or an abscess. And sometimes people are tempted to, you know, lance the boil or abscess themselves, and you should absolutely not do that by yourself. You should always have a professional do it, because if you do it the wrong way, you can actually push those bacteria into your bloodstream,
which is exactly where you don't want them.
Exactly.
Then we're talking about what? Septicemia?
Yes. You have bacteria in your blood. They can also go to your heart. They can affect all different organs in your body. You don't want them in your bloodstream.
One of the big risk factors is having surgery, because what's happening is you're in an environment like a hospital that has a lot of bacteria in it, and your immune system is compromised by surgery and likely multiple medications. So this, and then you have an open wound, a surgical wound. And this is why there's so many infections that happen in the hospital. And that is one risk factor. There are a lot of other risk factors as well, but that's probably one of the main ones, at least historically.
So for what would some of these other risk factors be that we want to really inform our listeners as far as what do they need to be thinking about in terms of, you know, what these risk factors?
Well, definitely any visit to a hospital, especially if it's a prolonged visit, if you're in the hospital for a while, if you are very young, infant, or, again, elderly, the immune system is going to be either not developed or not as strong as it used to be. So those are definite some general risk factors. If you work in crowded conditions, maybe military barracks, daycare, certainly any type of a healthcare environment, even schools, prisons, places like that, it's a lot easier for these bacteria to get a foothold and hang around and cause problems for people. You know, if you don't have adequate hygiene, if you're not really good at washing your hands, that's another thing that can really predispose you.
A red flag for me. What about, I don't know if I want to call this over hygiene aware or panicked or something, but this hand washing, what about all these antibacterial washes and soaps, are they doing the job?
This might sound strange coming from a microbiologist, but I don't recommend them.
And why not, Michelle?
I think people have gotten a little carried away with bacteria and cleanliness in a sense, and I'm not trying to diminish MRSA here at all, but, you know, bacteria are necessary for our lives. We each carry about 3 to 4 pounds in our body of bacteria, and they're necessary for you to synthesize vitamins. They live on your skin and they help protect you against dangerous bacteria like MRSA. So if you're using these, triclosan and all these common antibacterial soaps out there, there's data now that shows that they are actually contributing to antimicrobial resistance in bacteria. And more importantly, is you're actually harming the good bacteria on your body that are supposed to be helping you. Exactly. They're part of your immune system and helping protect you, and now you're getting rid of them as well.
But the cleanliness hygiene is being stressed, and yet we're getting rid of the very healthy bacteria that can really protect us. So this is kind of a double-edged sword here, this MRSA thing. Because another thing, and I would like either one of you to speak to this, another rebound problem is when people take antibiotics and it kills all the healthy bacteria in the gut, and then they get candida.
Fungal infections like candida are extremely common. So if you're lucky enough to get an antibiotic that actually works against your MRSA or staph and you get over it, often you get candida, which is a fungus. It's not a bacteria, and it can be often a systemic infection. It's not just something that women get. You know, you commonly hear about, you know, yeast infections, which, you know,
right.
Women certainly can get.
Oh, yeah.
But it can also be throughout your whole body. And antibiotics do not work against funguses.
Or viruses.
Or viruses.
Big so. Points. And a lot of, I think, are, the things that kind of like I'm thinking of chronic fatigue and, you know, Epstein-Barr, mononucleosis, things like this. I think, you know, it's just we have solutions that give us another problem. A solution that gives us another problem. Mm-hmm. One underlying issue, and I'd love to have you talk about this in depth, is the immune system then. Because where are we going to go for a common denominator that can help us against, because my understanding of the immune system, if it's strong, it would help against viruses, bacteria, fungus, you know, all kinds of things. So, but before we do that, if anybody's just joined us, I would like to say that you are listening to KRFC 88.9. But I'd like Michelle and Les to really deal with this one now about the immune system, because I think now we're kind of moving into some, you know, what can we do either to prevent ourselves from getting these things or kind of protect ourselves if we do. What are some of the choices and the actions?
Yeah, the immune system is actually, for the long-term success with these infections, honestly, I'd have to say there's nothing more important than addressing one's immune system. Even if we get the right antibiotic and it's used properly and it quickly, you know, brings a halt to an infection that we're having, unless the immune system is boosted and that is addressed, the infection's going to come right back. And that's really the biggest problem that we hear from people with these infections is they think it goes away and it comes back a few months later. And then they take more antibiotics and it looks like it goes away, but it comes back again. And the only way to really break out of that cycle is to get to the root cause of why this is coming back again and again. And you're right, the immune system is a really critical thing. And it's something that's been overlooked by traditional medicine. Traditional medicine oftentimes is very effective at treating the symptoms of providing quick relief, but for real long-term success with these infections, the body has to be turned into an environment that is not hospitable to these MRSA bacteria.
100% agree on this. And, you know, what I want you to kind of shift your thinking to is you can go out in the public and not be afraid of coming into contact with bacteria if your immune system is in good shape. You can go out with confidence and realize that if you do contact MRSA or staph bacteria, you may not get an infection. Or if you do, you can easily put out the fire a lot quicker if your immune system is bolstered. And there's a lot of ways, there's a lot of things that go into your immune system and what makes it healthier and what makes it less healthy. And less to mention, you know, one, if you're really young or really old, when you're young, your immune system isn't as developed. When you're older, it could be more compromised. There's things that go into effect as like pharmaceutical drugs, including antibiotics. They suppress your immune system and the fact that they're killing off your good bacteria, which help your immune system. Pharmaceuticals, toxins in the environment, which I know you talk a lot about, they make your body acidic. They put a burden on your body, which makes it not function as optimal. Your diet is tremendously huge. A lot of people don't realize it, but sugar, if you have an infection and you're still continuing to eat regular processed sugars, your high fructose corn syrup, that can actually just really explode the growth of your infection.
I mean, here's just looking at the immune system. One regular can of Coke, if you drink that, it'll actually, and this is a scientific study, it depresses your immune system by 92% for 5 hours.
So every time, are you hearing this, audience out there? Every time you or your children have a can of Coke, it will depress the immune system 92% for 5 hours. That has a lot of implication, because what do the majority of Americans drink all day long? Let's see. Coke, Pepsi, Coke, Pepsi,
yep.
Sprite, Coke,
seven
Sprite,
up.
Seven Up.
Yep.
So the immune system, I think, for most of us, is something that's kind of vague. I mean, it's like it's a big thing that we want to be strong for us, but we're not quite sure how. Well, one of the ways is, you know, changing our diet. You know, obviously going to foods that are not processed. In fact, you know, when you get, we could bring in the white flours right here. Mm-hmm. That's going to affect the immune system. Any processed foods that have been, you know, in a box too long, and then you're transforming them, and you're going to say, well, this is dinner. But there's not much really healthy about that, is there?
No.
So over time, we lose a lot. But what else can we do for the immune? I mean, diet is huge. What else?
Diet is a really important component, but especially for infections. You know, one thing that needs a lot of attention is the digestive system and the healthy bacteria in the gut. And this is really important for people who have taken antibiotics or who are taking them, because most of these antibiotics, they not only try to wipe out the quote bad bacteria, but they're also wiping out all the good bacteria in our gut. And that really depresses our immune system. So taking a quality probiotic is really important. And also eating foods that will naturally have these bacteria, like yogurt, can be helpful too.
Where does someone shop in a store to get good probiotics or live bacterial cultures?
That's a really, really good point, because a lot of yogurts, you know, they're pasteurized and it's killing off any live bacteria that might be there. You know, to find a really good probiotic, there are a lot of considerations, but you want to get something that's a spore-forming species that will actually survive long enough to make it through your stomach juices and
so
get into your gut.
It's not only the processing the food externally, but it's what your stomach does to the food, or the yogurt or the bacteria, the healthy bacteria. So we've got two levels that we need to think about. Well, does any store have it, or do they need to go to raw dairies, and what do we need to do to get this?
You can normally find good probiotics in your health food store.
Okay.
You're going to need to go there, or you might be able to find certain places online. But you want to look for a really high number of bacteria, and it's always at the time of manufacture, and they're always going to decline in numbers the longer they sit on the shelf. You're going to want to keep them refrigerated. Some stores may even have them in a refrigerated section. And there's going to be a lot of different strains you want to look at. And I've looked a lot at different bacterias and, you know, what makes up a good quality probiotic. But you want Lactobacillus acidophilus is always one of the mainstays for probiotics. And there's a lot of bifidobacteria species that you want to look at. And there's two different areas, the upper intestine and the lower intestine. And they each have kind of places that they like to stay.
And so we kind of need broad spectrum probiotics instead of broad-spectrum antibiotics. And I'd like to say, Michelle and Les don't just talk out of their kind of their background in history. They have documentation. They have references. They have articles. They have really done, you know, due diligence in putting this book together and giving people referenced material. It's not just your opinions.
Exactly.
Although your opinions I would value very much, but you've also gone to show people this, you know, hey, here's all this information that's being overlooked by mainstream medical community in the beginning.